by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's a good time to be alive and be in Wyoming, and we love the outdoors here. And Wyoming Game and Fish, a part of this show each and every week. And we always have Janet and the gang on because we want to make sure that everyone is informed. And Janet, there's an even easier way to be informed now because the new website is up and running.
That is right. I know we talked clear back in February, and now here we are in April that the website was going to go live, but it finally did this week, and it is fantastic, and we are excited.
It makes it so simple when you have a website that is very usable and information friendly, because we're getting to the point now where people are going to start heading to the website to mark out their territories and figure out their hunting grounds and where they want to apply for licenses. And the process is pretty much the same, just on a better platform.
Exactly. And so I want to reassure everyone that the apply or buy button is still on there. And when you go to what we call our electronic licensing system, or ELS, all of that is still the same. So don't panic. You'll easily be able to find that and navigate through that process. It just looks a little bit different. Colors got changed, those sorts of things. But nothing there has changed. But what has improved is the rest of the website. So you can go to the Hunt Planner and find out a lot of great information. And then, you know, it's got a lot of our contact information on there that you can easily find. And then just what's going on in each of the regions across the state.
You know, Janet, one thing that that you can find on this website, it's wgfd.wyo.gov, and that's up-to-date information on a lot of different research. And, you know, we just had the season setting meetings not long ago, so a lot of that information can be found right there on the website.
That's right. All of that information is there. And, you know, it does kind of come and go. It disappears after the dates maybe are over and it's not relevant information anymore. So that is something that is kind of new and exciting for us, so that if you do go to the search bar and you do type in something, let's just say North Platte River Flushing Flows, the information from 5 years ago doesn't pop up. And so we're really excited to actually have the accurate information on there, the great dates that apply to right now. And then when things are kind of over and done, we kind of let it disappear, and it's still there if you need it. You can search in the search bar, but for the most part, hopefully accurate dates and info will be there.
You know, Janet, one thing that I found when I was scrolling through the new website, wgfd.wyo.gov, was that it's very easy to find what wildlife we have here in Wyoming. And one of them that really is interesting to me, because it's a timely time to talk about sage grouse. And there's a full section just on sage grouse alone. So I thought, hey, why don't we bring in some experts?
That's right. And, you know, you do bring this up as such a great time to be talking about sage grouse. You know, a lot of our males are out dancing on the leks, and it's such an awesome opportunity for the public to get to see them. And so I'm hoping, Drew, that you easily found our sage grouse lek viewing guide.
I did. And it is really easy and simple to go there and check it out. But let's talk to some folks that are on the ground. And not really on the ground, I guess, are they?
Look at you, pun intended. We have two fantastic people here, and they actually just walked out of the airplane and joined us here on the radio. So it's kind of exciting. As the weather is getting nicer, they are out to get to doing more of kind of the sage grouse sampling, viewing, collecting of data that we often talk about. So we have Brandon Warner, our Casper Region wildlife biologist, and we also have Chris, our pilot.
And guys, I know that you get the opportunity to see the ground from high above the ground. And when you're up in the air, do you have better opportunities to see the grouse in different kind of situations that maybe you wouldn't on the ground?
Absolutely. I mean, you are getting a bird's eye view. And when that sun comes up and it hits those birds, they just glow. I mean, when they're strutting, they got a big white chest with those yellow orange sacks, and they just really stick out. So it's just really neat to see how the birds use the landscape. And also using a plane with the snow that we've just had, like you can't get in there with a four-wheeler or a pickup, anything like that. So plane's the best option.
When you're flying high above, what all kind of data are you collecting?
So we're trying to see how many males are using the LEX. So that's a really good indicator of how the population's doing over time. We can't count females because they're brown and they really blend in, but these males are really they have high sight fidelity. So they come back to these LEX day after day. And then as April goes on, the juvenile males, so the chicks last year, they'll come and start displaying.
So when they display, what are they doing? Is this like when a turkey is strutting? They're like, hey, baby, come on over.
That's exactly what it is. It's all about breeding. They're setting up their social hierarchies. The prettiest males, they're going to get to do most of the breeding.
Gosh, the lucky pretty ones.
For sure.
Now, how does this data go toward helping out the grouse?
Well, it's really important. So sage grouse are somewhat of an indicator species of how, like, all wildlife that relies on sagebrush. I mean, a sage grouse relies on sagebrush. So when sage grouse are doing well, typically, you know, other animals such as antelope and deer are doing well. But we really want to protect these sage grouse leks in these areas because, like I said, they're really specific to the sites that they like to come back. So there's been some talk about listing the sage grouse under the Federal Endangered Species Act. And so what we do, biologists, BLM, even some private consultants, we go out to these leks. I have about 110 in my district. And we count the males on it so we can report to the feds like, hey, our populations are actually doing better. You know, maybe they don't require listing.
How accurate can you get a count being up? And how many feet off the ground are you flying?
I'll kind of let Chris talk about this.
So the biologists are definitely more skilled with seeing grouse than I have been historically. But I'm getting better and better every year, and it's always fun when every once in a while I get the first sighting before the biologist in the back does. But typically, we'll fly 150 to 200 feet off the ground is all.
And at that level, does that disturb the grouse, or are they not even really realize that it's there?
You know, it can, but with these guys sharing points with me, we try to approach cautiously and keep our distance. So as long as we're keeping our distance radius away from the lek, I can get close enough with the airplane and pull the power back close to an idle to limit our noise, and they can get a good count, and we can sneak away without disrupting anything the majority of the time.
So if you're flying over a certain lek, how many times will you have to pass over before you can get a good count?
Yeah, it depends on who I'm flying with, but when I'm with a guy like Brandon, who's just a natural at this, we'll get it on the first pass quite often. This morning, the sightings we had were mostly single passes. Brandon got a count. We flew right away.
Which is kind of crazy because, Brandon, you had mentioned that you had like 110 leks, right?
Right, but there's only a select few that we fly. Like if we don't have access to private land or it's just really difficult to get in there or a long ways from town. So like I said, having some help from other game and fish employees, BLM, even private consultants, there's no way we could get to all those leks without their help.
So having that airplane really does add to the accuracy of all of the counts that you do.
Oh, for sure. And we had something pretty exciting happen this morning. We found a new lek, which is pretty dang difficult to do. So we're really excited about that, which we would have never found if we weren't in the airplane.
That is cool. Now, when you find a new lek, I mean, do you just put a waypoint down and then you start to research that area?
Yeah, for sure. So I'll put a waypoint in and then I kind of back up. So it's technically not a lek yet. The first time we find it, we call it a miscellaneous strutting site. And then we'll go back next year, and if there's birds on it 2 years in a row, boom, we have a new lek.
Wow. And are these in areas that people can actually stop and you know, watch the grouse?
Yes and no. So we don't give away all of the lek locations because we don't want to disturb their breeding. However, we do give away one, and that one's the County Road Reservoir lek, which is off of Highway 220 and Oregon Trail. You can see it right there off the road. We have some PDFs on our website. I usually keep some here in the office. You can come get a map. And I'd like to talk too about how, when you're going to view this lek, to do it ethically. So you want to be there about a half hour before sunrise to about an hour after. You know, stay in your vehicle, bring some good optics with you, and don't get out and disturb the lek. You know, if you want to take pictures, bring a camera. Just definitely do not walk out to the lek.
So this is one of those situations where it's not a good idea that if you're just on a whim, you know, driving by, you're like, I'm going to swing on in and see what the sage grouse are up to. This is something you need to pre-plan to make sure that you don't interrupt what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. If you show up 2 hours after sunrise, a good chance those birds will be gone.
So when you're doing these surveys, and I know that you do this, and there's a reason behind every survey. We talk about how from January until December 31st, there's data being taken all through Game and Fish. And the airplane is just one of the ways that you will do the surveys. The others, I assume you had mentioned that it's easier to do the airplanes than trying to get on a four-wheeler or side-by-side or a truck. So what other ways is data collected for these leks?
Yeah, so Game and Fish employees, BLM employees, consultants, they'll get in their work trucks. And we'll go ahead and drive out and count them in the mornings. But then in the fall, when we have hunting seasons too, I put out wing barrels in a lot of areas that these birds get hunted. And the successful hunters will cut a wing off, and they'll put them in those barrels. And then we could see, was this an adult male, adult female, and then a juvenile of either sex. So we can sex and age these birds based on the wings. Then we get our chick to hen ratio to see if our population is increasing that way as well.
Brandon, obviously, you know, wildlife is a love of yours, and you can't really do this job and hate to see the wildlife. So it's got to be pretty neat to fly around and check out these birds that you maybe have seen, you know, at times past.
It's absolutely wonderful to see these birds out there doing their thing. It's something seriously unique that we have to Wyoming. We have so many sage grouse, and it's just such a unique experience.
And then to be in the air as another bird, you know, these birds don't realize that's not another bird floating around. But to start the process out, it's quite a deal, right? Because there are some rules that you have to follow when you're heading up above the ground.
Oh, for sure. So like Chris, he's one of our contract pilots. I don't know exactly what it takes for you to get under the contract, but you can talk about that.
So I guess I'll first start and talk about some of the rules. We need to maintain a 500-foot buffer from structures like houses, barns, livestock, people. And, you know, 500 feet's hard to measure. So we definitely try to stay even more so away from disturbing anybody. That's the last thing we want to do. And low-flying airplanes are more commonplace in Wyoming than probably other places in the United States, but it's still uncommon. So we want to conduct our work professionally in a respectful way to landowners and the public alike. So the Game and Fish specifically requires pilots to have 1,500 hours before they're allowed to fly for the Game and Fish. That's a challenge as an operator because the airlines also require 1,500 hours before you can become an airline pilot. There's some other requirements in there as well, but most people at that 1,500 hour mark, you are either onto your forever flying career and you don't have time to do this seasonal work. So I'm grateful that I get to be here and do this. And you have to want to do this if you're here doing it.
Chris, Brandon, how long will you plan together when you're talking about going up and doing data? I mean, are you a couple of days? Is it a week?
Well, Chris is a really busy guy, so I have to book him a couple months out. But as we get closer, we're definitely like looking at the weather is the most important thing. So, yeah, we're looking a week or two out with the weather. And then the day before, be like, yep, it's green. Let's go tomorrow. And, you know, just like yesterday, we had to call it a day early because we had some snow coming in. But today was just the most gorgeous surveying conditions you could hope for.
Which obviously that's the biggest part living in this state is it could change on a dime and the wind can, you know, stir up and all of a sudden you're dealing with choppy conditions, which isn't safe like Janet was saying. But when you guys continue on these surveys, do you have more planned in the next month or so?
So today was the last flight with Brandon that I have scheduled, but I do have several other biologists around the state on the calendar, and things always change as we get closer, but I like to plug them in. That way they're a priority in my planning. And these guys are the best to fly with. There's not external pressure. If things change, the weather changes, I make a phone call, we make a new plan. So as far as clients go, they're the easiest to work with. And that's not just the Game and Fish, but all of our clients are just wonderful when it comes to scheduling. And they always default to our opinion on safety. And all of our guys, including me, are not afraid to call it. I mean, if the weather's not right, it's just not right, and we'll fly another day.
Well, you guys do a heck of a job, and it's got to be pretty exciting to get up there. And Brandon, I don't know how much flying you have under your belt, but it's got to be pretty neat to jump in an airplane and fly around Wyoming.
It absolutely is. I mean, you really get to see how those animals use the landscape, and that really helps me do my job. It's just awesome.
If you want to find out more about sage grouse and elect viewing, go to the new wgfd.yo.gov. And print out those guides or stop in and see the folks at the office there at Game and Fish here in Casper. And Chris, Brandon, Janet, we appreciate it and continued the good work.
Thanks, Drew.
We'll see ya.
Thanks, Drew.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And boy, Brian, springtime is upon us. The walleye banquet is behind us, had that last night, and then now we're looking forward to, you know, getting into the real fishing season, are we?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd like to get out on the water this week, but that darn Mother Nature is going to throw us another curveball with some wet weather and cold.
Yeah, I went up on the mountain, Wednesday of last week, and it was snow. It was blizzard up there. I thought I was in January, not April. But
yeah, I tell you what, as soon as we just have to remember that we're still really early. Like yeah. We're a month ahead of schedule in a lot of cases. You know, I mean, there's place times we've still had ice on Glendo this time of year. So we can't get too anxious, but. By golly, I've had my boat out twice, and I'm just, you know, itching to keep it out.
Yeah, no kidding. You know? And I know that there are people chomping in the bit because I've seen people just – they kind of look like zombies sometimes because, oh, I want to buy this because I need to get it from my boat, but I don't want to get all, you know, amped up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, why not buy it now and just, you know, put it in its place and be ready?
Yeah, well, it's nice to have, like, that walleye banquet behind us, and, you know, we got the Tough Man tournament coming up in 2 weeks on the 27th up at Alcova. So get that under our belt, and the fishing's been good up there. So we might actually have as long as the weather holds out for that event, we might actually have a pretty good weekend up there.
So are you saying the Tough Man may not be as tough this year?
I'm okay with that. Yeah. Because I tell you what, that Tough Man, when we used to have it a little earlier, I mean, a lot of times you'd pull a boat out on the ramp, and the ramp would freeze up, and so the next guy putting his boat in would be like sliding down to the water, and it wasn't safe, and it wasn't that fun. So, and then being up in that canyon in the mornings with no sun and cold.
Oh yeah,
I mean it's like an ice box up there.
You know, it is going to be funky weather, so rain in the forecast for the next 6-8 weeks. We're in the springtime, so we get those spring showers, and you guys are carrying the Striker rain gear now, and you got some pretty good selections.
We're kind of nice, glad to have that rain gear. I was able to get up on Boys and Reservoir last week, and I only get a couple days off a week, so we decided to go ahead and launch the boat with 1- and 2-footers on the water, and then by the time we were done, there was 4- and 5-footers on the lake.
Oh, geez.
And a couple of the guys that I was with, you know, they didn't quite dress appropriately, and I had a couple extra pairs of rain gear in my boat, and just throwing that on to break the wind. And then, of course, as we're working across the lake and going across sideways across those waves, you know, you're always going to get some splash over the side. And it was definitely nice to have it. And I just had the lightweight Striker gear that we're carrying. I think it's called the Vortex series. But we just got in some of the insulated rain gear. And that stuff just feels nice. It's almost like it's a quilted lining on the inside. So I'm kind of excited to try out some of that this year as well.
You know, talk about the rain gear, but what do we talk about gloves? What do you like to get for gloves when on, you know, times like this? Because you want to be reaching in the water to get the fish out, but I mean, that's rough when it's freezing.
It is tough. I mean, this last week, I was wearing pretty heavy like leather gloves because it was just that cold. A lot of times you can wear like the fingerless gloves and keep the majority of your hands warm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're threading minnows on a hook, it's, you know, you got to have something that, you know, you can work with. And, you know, I was just slipping gloves on and off, and to do that, just to keep that. But another trick that I've learned over the years is just to wear a pair of like nitrile or latex gloves. Your hands will sweat inside of them, but it breaks the wind. And when you're putting your hands in the minnow bucket, you can still, you know, tie knots with those gloves on. You can still, you know, thread the minnows on. So a pair of latex gloves is kind of fun to keep in your pocket. They're cheap, you know, and they're disposable. So, you know, if you have to take a pair off for some reason and then put another pair on, it definitely helps. I mean, I'm one of the guys I used to ice fish with, that was one of his tricks.
And just wear the latex gloves. Mm-hmm. You could also get one of the hand warmers that you can have and put it inside your glove once your hands get a little bit chilly.
Yeah, you know, when the weather's that cold out, I mean, just a couple of those, instant heat hand warmers, just throw mm-hmm. them in your jacket pockets and at least get yourself, you know, a little bit of warmth back to you.
Yeah, and taking that dry bag with the dry clothes is always a good idea. And of course, you can come in here and get all the items that you're going to need for any kind of weather. You know, you want to be prepared for anything, especially here in Wyoming.
Yeah, last week I wish I had the Mr. Heater in the boat as well, but we did not do that. We were not expecting the weather that we had, but glad that we had the clothing that we had.
Right. So come on in and check this out. If you're looking for that mid-season clothing, you know, you got you guys still have some of the boots and stuff too, mm-hmm. that'll take care of your feet in situations like that.
Yeah, you know, this time of year, it's just definitely one of those, make sure you layer up and, you know, bring more than you think you need, because you can always strip clothes off.
Yeah, get on here and check them out and get all the details that you need here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Fishing season, that's what we love. You know, here in Wyoming, it's fishing season all year round, because if you can get on the water, you can fish. And I've seen that a lot of guys have been having a lot of success on the river lately.
The river fishing looks like it is really doing well.
Yeah, Gray Reef, I've seen guys just slaughtering them up there.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially if you take the time and you're going with a reputable guide service, and, you know, they're working those holes. I mean, I've seen some beautiful trout come out of there, some nice browns. And, you know, you're paying for someone's expertise, and those guys know what they're doing.
Yeah, they're experts.
They are experts.
They live up to that name for sure. And mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of guys with walleye, too, that are hitting them pretty hard.
Yeah, you know, there's been a handful of guys shore fishing up at Pathfinder. And a jig and a floating jig head and a minnow just tearing them up,
slaying them. Yeah, it seems odd to me, because I feel like we don't normally talk about as much success as we have in the early part of this year.
Well, again, we haven't had this much open water this early. You know, I mean, so it does make a little bit of a difference. And I think, you know, the fish populations are good. You know, I mean, we've talked about Alcova the last few weeks, and talking to the biologist, you know, the local biologist, he said that the 18 to 25 inch year class is really strong right now at Alcova. So, I mean, guys that are targeting walleyes out there should see some good quality fish.
And one thing that we, you know, we stress is the stress that goes on these fish at this time, because we're looking at, you know, the spawn mm-hmm. happening and, you know, being easy on them when you're letting them back or whatnot.
Well, and that's just it. Like, you know, we were up at Boysen this last week, and we caught one, I don't know, it was probably an 18 incher, but, you know, we grabbed it out of the net, and it started spewing eggs all over the place. And normally I would have thought that was a smaller male, but, you know, those are important fish to put back in the water. I mean, they're millions of eggs, you know, that potentially are, you know, mm-hmm. raising more walleyes. And, you know, if we take them all out this time of year, then, you know, we don't have that option of reproducing.
So when you're out, at Boysen, and it was a rough day, you were windy and cold and bouncing around and not much biting then, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, you know, when you drive that far, we looked at the weather and it looked like it was going to be, you know, high of 50 and like 5 to 10 mile an hour winds, which was, you know, 20 miles less than Glendo. So we went that direction instead. And when we got there, the guy we were meeting on the dock said, yeah, 15 minutes ago, this was dead calm. He goes, now we got 2 footers on the lake. And we decided to go ahead and launch anyways. And we fought, you know, the waves across the lake trying to get to a non-windy side of a bay. And we could not get out of the wind up there. It was coming out of the north, which is really bad up for that lake. And it was just a rough day. I mean, the Tarova, the old Terra, it held the boat in good position. But we had just so much wind. And even running, you know, heavier jig heads, we were still having a hard time staying in contact with the bottom and even feeling bites because, you know, we're wearing gloves, pretty heavy gloves. And, you know, and when you're sitting there chilly and
you don't know if it's a bite or not,
you're not sure if you had a bite or if you just had the chills, you know. So, but we did end up catching a couple really nice trout and then one walleye. And I think, you know, if a guy had the right weather conditions, I think, you know, they'd probably have a pretty successful day because it looked like the fish were, you know, we missed a handful of bites.
Which what we were talking about earlier is, you know, you could start out and leave and it's fine, but it's an hour and 15 minutes to get there. So that's a lot of time for it to change, especially in that area.
Yeah, I mean, it and again, you know, I still caught more fish than I would have if I was sitting on my couch. And, you know, we learned a little bit about make sure the boat was running good. So.
Right. Absolutely. And that's one of the things at this time, too, that you've stressed the entire time was to always, you know, this is the time to have that boat ironed out, because if it's 50 with 30 mile an hour winds, it's going to be cold out there on the water and you don't want to be broke down. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we by far were the only boat on the water when we got off yesterday. There was another guy that had just launched before us, but he didn't stick it out very long. And rightfully so. I mean, it was miserable conditions, but you know, for me, I mean, I've got limited days off. And so I'll fish whatever I can when I can. So
well, and I think just this week down in the Glendo area, there was a boater that was missing, and they found him the next morning. But because he was prepared, you know, and didn't
was that Alcova? I think it was up in the canyon up at Alcova.
Wasn't it up there?
Yeah, there was some boat problems or something.
Yeah, and had an issue. So, you know, that definitely is one of those things where you got to be prepared for all things this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, just staying warm and dry is the biggest factor. And, you know, put your boat in, you know, with everybody else. So when your truck's the only one there at the end of the night, you know, somebody might need to go looking for you.
Right. And obviously, you know, here in Wyoming, you're not always going to have good cell service. So that may be a good thing to have one of those sat phones if you're going to a place like that.
Yeah, you know, there's even these programs like, you know, Garmin makes a little mini. And then there's also the Zoleo. And both of those just kind of have SOS features to them. They kind of Bluetooth back to your phone, so you can actually, you know, type in special messages. But, you know, in the event that, you know, you capsize your boat and you have to pull it up on shore somewhere and you have to hit an SOS button, especially on reservoirs like Pathfinder and Seminole that are so big and so remote, probably wouldn't be a horrible idea.
Yep, and always make sure you have your life jackets available, especially on, you know, on a choppy lake like you were on the other day. I mean, that's really important to have those flotation devices.
Well, and, you know, we were talking about while we were on those big waves, and, you know, a lot of it, you don't really learn how to, you know, manage those waves until you're in them, you know. So being able to, you know, be dressed appropriately so you could take a couple waves if you know, as you're learning how to, you know, whether you're cutting across the waves on a 45 or you're going straight into them, you know, you have to learn whether or not, you know, you trim your motor all the way up or you trim the motor all the way down. Do you want to keep the bow of the boat up, or do you know how you're riding those waves definitely makes a big difference. And especially when they're just big rollers, and, you know, you don't want to have a roller come up over the back of you either. So
right. Well, and that's something that in Wyoming, you don't really have to worry about those a lot. So when they happen, maybe out of practice.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's nobody ever wants to just go do it, but I mean, understanding your boat and, you know, the more time you spend in it and the different conditions you're in it, you're definitely going to become a better boater, you know, just by time on the water.
Yeah, and, you know, make sure you have all your safety equipment and everything up to date, and come on in here and check them out at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports if you have any questions.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It is another great day here in Wyoming on Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. Of course, you can always go listen to any of the shows that we have done over the last 3 years at the on-demand section of our radio station's app and website. Today, we welcome in Lindsay Stillwell with HD Outdoors. And Lindsay, you have really moved into a busy time. We started the year out with Thankful Thursday, which was very successful. And you guys now have started the trend over the last couple of years of having the Calcutta and the Clays for the Brave event.
Yep, yep. We are gearing up for that. So we're actually moving it a little bit into the spring this year instead of in June. Just to kind of get away from the competition of like graduations and everything. Yeah. You know, as soon as the weather gets nice around here, of course, like everything heats up. So we decided to move it into May. So it's actually going to be May 3rd and 4th this year. And we've moved it into town. So we are going to be doing it at the Casper Ski Club. So we'll have the Calcutta the night before at the hangar, just like we did last year. And then the next morning, we'll all kind of get together at 8 a.m. up by the event center at the Ski Club and do it there. So
which,
we're excited.
For a lot of folks, that's probably a pretty good draw, because even though Bob has a great location in Riverbend, being right here in town, you don't have to get up as early. You don't have to put as much into getting your stuff out there.
Right, right. Yep. No, it'll take them a little less time to kind of get there, give them more time in the morning. They can sleep in a little bit, you know, after the Calcutta. Yeah. So that's good. That's good. And then afterwards, this year, we're kind of adding... instead of doing the meal like right there when they get done shooting, we're actually going to move everybody down to Gruner Brothers.
Okay.
So that's going to be exciting. So Gruner Brothers, from 12 to 3, we're just going to have the entire place for everybody from Clays for the Brave. So as the teams kind of roll in, which is usually about an hour to kind of get everybody finished, they can just pack up their stuff and drive down and park and go in. And they'll have food right there for them, and they can grab a beer and wait for us all to get there. And then we'll do the awards and the payouts from the Calcutta there at Gruner Brothers. So that'll be nice.
Let's do a little, I guess, background of HD Outdoors first off, and then where the idea came for the Clays for the Brave. Because I know you guys have been in business not as long as some other people may think here in the area, and you're a separate organization from all the others.
Right. So we actually had our third birthday last month. So we've been 3 years now that we've been doing this. So as a whole, not just Clays for the Brave, but HD Outdoors as a whole. So we're still pretty young. And, you know, we're definitely growing. We're kind of, you know, I feel like we kind of keep the growth at a nice steady pace on purpose, because we want to make sure that we are not growing too quick. And we want to make sure that we're really like putting as much effort into everything that we're doing all the time. So I think as an organization, the one thing that we met about so many meetings prior to kicking off and getting started was that was the one thing we really was a focus that we wanted to keep moving forward, was just having steady growth and making sure that, you know, the same amount of effort gets put in and we're not growing so fast that things are just going too quick. So I think that we've been successful with that. Like, you know, we keep our big game hunting. You know, we only do 20 of those a year. That's our max. Mm-hmm. So this last fall, obviously, with John and I being out of town, like we had to kind of minimize those a little bit more, just so we weren't putting like too much pressure on everybody. But with the big game hunting, like that's the highlight for everybody. But we try to keep that at 20 or less, just because of us being 100% all inclusive. So, and when I say 100% all inclusive, like we, you know, we're covering the taxidermy, we're covering the processing, however they want it for any species. We're covering their fuel if they need it, lodging if they need it, all the food. You know, if they need a weapon, we supply them with that. We take them to the range. You know, make sure everything's good, everything's working correctly, they're proficient. So we put a lot of effort, but a lot of funding that we bring in goes towards that. So, but we try to keep, you know, obviously the events going year round. And Clays, I'm trying to think like where the idea came from. It was probably a meeting with Bob, I think, some point. Like, I can't remember exactly where it stemmed, you know, because we started Recoil Therapy too, but we wanted to be able to have an event that was interactive with not only the community, but and bring in some of our veterans, but also not just be a banquet. And so that's kind of where Clay's, I think we'd attended the Sur shoot and we were like, hey, what if we kind of modeled something like that, but made it a fundraising event, but also an event where we can have four or five teams of veterans. And so that's kind of where it, I guess, the idea came from. Last year was our first Calcutta. So the first year we didn't do a Calcutta. It was just a shoot. So it was just the one-day event. Last year, we decided to add the Calcutta, and I think that was a good addition. We did, you know, the first year, I think we had 11 teams. Last year, we had like 15 or 16. So this year, we're hoping we can host 30.
Okay.
We're hoping for, you know, our goal, I guess, is, you know, hopefully if we had 20, that'd be a great growth. You know, if we max at 30, awesome.
Like, yeah.
That's, I mean, best case scenario. So, and the Calcutta is great. Like, so what we do is we take, you know, we take the Calcutta money and we split it. So half of that money goes towards the organization. The other half is then split in two. So the person that buys the team gets half and then the team gets half.
And that's one of the things I want to stress, too, is the Calcutta is not like a normal auction. It's not like a normal banquet. And this is where you're going out and you're choosing the team that you think will do the best in the whole competition.
Right, right. So, yeah, and that's and that gets, you know, last year at the Calcutta, I mean, we had every team had somebody betting on it, which was fun. And some of these teams are brand new to the sport. You know, they've never done it. But no, it was fun. I mean, and some of the guys that are out there shooting, I mean, are very excellent shooters and very, you know, very talented at what they're doing and they're very serious about it. So that's great. We like to see that come in. But yeah, the Calcutta is set up a little bit different, but it kind of gives everybody an opportunity to not just to come in and just have all these auction items and all this, you know, they get a bet on each other. Yeah. They get to get some competitive stuff going on before the shoot starts the next day. And then we also do the top shooter of the day. So the top shooter out of everybody is going to get, they get a prize and they get a plaque. And then we also have the worst shooter.
Hey, that's my prize right there.
That's me too. That's why I did that because I've been that person.
Yeah, before. Right.
I was like, I need to get, I should have got a prize for that.
Yeah.
It was very humbling.
So. Well, and the best part of the whole weekend is HD Outdoors is going to benefit. And all the proceeds will go to the organization where those big game hunts can happen. You guys also do fishing trips and fishing opportunities. So it's not just hunting. It's all around outdoor experiences.
Yeah. And it's all, and the one thing too that we really focus on is all year round. So we try to create something year round. Our goal is to always have something like once a month. Mm-hmm. This winter with us coming back after being gone for a few months has been a little tricky. But I think as we gear up, like getting ready for Clay's, Clay's is going to be the first Friday. So normally on the first Friday in nice weather, we have recoil therapy.
Right.
So this will kind of take that place. In June, then we'll start up recoil therapy again back out at Bob's. So that'll be good. And we'll do that through, you know, probably through October. Usually September, October. September is usually good. October, it gets kind of hairy because it's in the middle of big game.
Yeah, honey. Right.
So, and then the other thing, too, a lot of people don't realize that kind of sets us apart from everybody else that's doing similar things to us is that we only work with Wyoming veterans at this point. So far after 3 years of all the different events that we've hosted and trips that we've booked as far as fishing or even equine stuff. Like last year we had a guy, we've been teaming up with other organizations that offer things in the outdoors that we don't offer. So we kind of call it like a scholarship program. So we had a guy last year that was able to go work with a wild Mustang. They paired him with one based on his personality and the horse's personality. He spent 6 weeks there training with the horse.
Oh,
and then he got to go compete at the county fair. And then he actually got, they have the choice at the end if they want to bring the horse home. So he got to bring his horse home, which was exciting. And then I just met with another equine therapist that's here in Casper, just moved here. And we are going to be hosting, we're going to do two trail rides this summer with about 4 to 6 veterans per ride. And then we're going to start some like weekly and monthly counseling sessions, like in the arena with horses. So like we want to make sure we're just, you know, continually offering those things, but we are just literally focused on Wyoming veterans 100%. So we will have one, our first veteran from out of state will be coming in this year for one big game hunt. And he's a double amputee and he's doing an elk hunt on horseback. So that'll be our first, and that was just kind of based on how the tag was donated and kind of the logistics of that. So that'll be our first venture outside the state of Wyoming. The rest of all of our vets this fall will all be from here. So
people may not realize how many veterans are actually here. John and Bob are both veterans, so I'm sure that it plays really close to their heart. And the recoil therapy that I've gone to, I was able to take a vet for the first time, and just to see the camaraderie that all these guys and ladies have together is really healing for someone like me that knows what they go through but don't really know what they go through, but they do. And that's the great part about HD Outdoors. And for those that don't know, HD is honor and duty.
Yes.
So, I mean, we're honoring those that serve the duty that, you know, for the country.
Yeah. And I think it's been, you know, that's one thing that I don't think that when we had this idea and we got started, like we didn't really, I mean, obviously our goal is to make an impact, right? And to create something that is like a zero burden experience on the veteran. But I don't think that we really had an understanding of what kind of like family and that camaraderie and how that was going to, because you look at it and you say, okay, we can host 20 hunts and we can do this and we can do this like throughout the year. And you're, so you're looking to fill those spots and you're looking to make sure that it's like such a grand experience for them. And it's, you know, you hope for it to be life-changing, but I guess you don't look at the, like the bigger, further picture. And that's what we're finding out now is like how this has created this community inside of our community. And like that we're, we've become a part of, and it's created this like family that we all are, you know, it's, I mean, we talk all the time. We're in this huge group text all the time that we're adding more veterans all the time. We're getting more veterans that are coming into the program, whether their family members reach out to us and say, hey, like, you know, my wife needs like, you know, needs something. She's a veteran and she's never been involved in anything. And like, this would be perfect for her. Like we've had those things happen, or my husband or my brother. And so, and we're just finding that, that sense of family and that where these people, once they come in, are a part of our life now, every single day moving forward. And that group just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And that's been a huge life-changing thing, not only, I think, for the veterans, but for us and for John and for all of the veterans that are in our organization. Like, that's been a huge thing that we're seeing the benefits for them and for us, I think, personally as well. And so that was something that every day, I think, right now is a surprise to us and a blessing. You know what I mean?
The best way to get involved, you can go to our website or our app, or you can go check them out. It's HDOutdoorsWyoming.
Yo.org. Yeah. And if you just go there, I think actually looking at the website right now, if you go there on the homepage, just scroll down and right after sponsor hunt, it says Clays for the Brave register.
Okay.
And so you can just go right in and register your team. And then if you want, like my phone number, email is right there. So if you have like some of these companies want to bring a company check, it's, you can register your team and then you can call me or text me and let me know like, hey, we're going to bring a check at the event, or we'll see you at the night, at the Calcutta night, or we're going to pay cash. You know, it's so they can get their team registered and then come and pay me later if they need to. So
awesome.
That's fine.
Well, make sure you're part of this. And if you have more questions, reach out to Lindsay or reach out to us here and we can get you in contact with Lindsay. But it's going to be a great event, the 3rd and 4th of May, and it will be in Casper, the hangar for the Calcutta, and then the shoot will be at the
Casper Ski Club.
The Ski Club up by the Ford Wyoming Center. So, Lindsay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.